Hi. So we are going to start with the next session. So we have our presenter, James Bottomley, who is going to cover the selfish contributor. So here we can start with that.
Okay, well, hi everybody. Thank you very much for coming. One of the things I really like about FOSDEM is it's a conference that actually has a lot of excitement about it, but mostly they're willing to take talks that I give that are about weird and wonderful sort of parts of my brain that grew up in the prehistory of open source that no other conference will. And so this talk is pretty much that. So this is exploring the really weird parts of my brain from what I've observed in the 20-odd, 25 years I've been involved with the Linux kernel project. I suppose I should nod to Silvestre, who was the last speaker, and say that by the time you rewrite my brain in Rust, it won't have any of these dark corners where these talks come from. But until that happens, I'm perfectly happy to give these sort of talks. So a bit about me, where I came from in giving this talk. I started out life, as I said, as a kernel maintainer or kernel developer, and I've been doing the kernel for many years. I was actually been an open source advocate for a long time. I was on the legal panel earlier on advocating for the DCO, which is the legal mechanism whereby you make contributions to the Linux kernel. Part of my job, when we first engaged, then OSDL and later the Linux Foundation, was to evangelize for the DCO because we knew if we made it industry standard, nobody would be able to question it, which is the position we're pretty much in today, 20 years later. I also led the effort to create the Linux Foundation Technical Advisory Board, and I did do a few things with containers that have been forgotten about long in the depths of time. But what I want to talk to you today is about these sort of deeper, darker motivations that come with open source and why people actually do it, and how, based on this, you can manage communities that do it. I should also say that I gave a talk similar to this 5 years ago at FOSDEM, just before COVID hit, actually. And it was also entitled The Selfish Contributor. But it was mostly focused on the aspects of selfishness that help drive open source engagement with business. So I was really trying to explain to you how you can use selfish motivations to drive engagement with open source in businesses. This talk is actually going to be trying to explain how you can use the selfish motivations of individuals, people, to actually help accrete and drive your community. So with that, we'll get on with it. I do have to give you a disclaimer. This talk is mostly my opinion. The reason it's so controversial is not everybody shares my opinion about how open source works, what you should be doing, and everything. So this is all on me. I do work for Microsoft now, and you may attribute anything in this talk to me personally. My employer has nothing to do with any of the opinions that I'm going to be telling you, so you may not attribute them to them. This is the legal disclaimer. This is why they allow me to come and do these sort of talks, if I make clear that I'm talking on my behalf, not on their behalf. And with that, we'll get into all of the problems of managing engineers, which are many, shall we say. So this is a great cartoon. Managing engineers, as has been often said, everybody has heard this, is like herding cats. This is one of Sarah Anderson's pictures of a cat herder. But basically, all engineers like to go their own way. They like to do their own thing in exactly the same way as cats do. And a cat herder really just doesn't work. The basic problem that has plagued industry for a long time is that getting engineers to do productive work, and by productive work, industry means work that the VPs and the, CEO of your corporation wants done. All engineers would claim whatever they were doing, including looking out of the window, they were doing productive work, obviously because we're thinking. But companies have very fixed ideas of what productive work actually is. So engineers tend to work best and work most productively on things they like doing, which is a very important thing to observe. And usually every engineer has a slightly different motivation. Everyone likes doing slightly different things, or sometimes even radically different things. I mean, some people even work on Rust, from what I've heard, whereas obviously people like me working in the Linux kernel would work mostly on C. So there's obviously a diversity of motivation among sort of everybody. Industry, as in industry that hire traditional engineers to produce proprietary software, has been struggling with productivity issues in software teams for a long time, primarily because it's very difficult to motivate engineers to work on the same problem. You know, and industry's idea was, we'll produce a project plan and we'll sit you through meetings and we'll get you in there and we'll get HR in to give you a motivational talk, and eventually you'll figure out what we want producing and you'll do it. And this always worked somewhat slowly. It worked, so it crept slowly towards its goal, but when open source came along, it was a real revelation, because open source managed to move much more rapidly than industry did. And if you know anything about industry, you know the watchword is always agility, right? And so industry became very jealous of the way open source actually ran. So let's do some analogies from truffle hunting. Although I work for Microsoft, I now live in Virginia, but I used to live actually a mile away from the Microsoft campus in Bellevue. And one of the things I really liked about living in the Pacific Northwest for 8 years is that the Pacific Northwest actually has a truffle industry. So I could, as a sort of, in my spare time, I enjoy cooking, and I really enjoyed cooking with black and white truffles that I could just go and pick up in the local farmer's market, because the Pacific Northwest actually has a native truffle called the Tuber melanosporum that grew up in the Pacific Northwest and is found nowhere else in the world. It tastes very similar to the Perigord truffles you get here, but obviously the French think it's not as good. I do disagree with that statement. I think you can get truffles from the Pacific Northwest as good as you can get here. But the point is, if you live in the Pacific Northwest, you pick them up in the farmer's market and they're cheap. I mean, they're a lot cheaper than the Perigord truffles, which means I can cook with them an awful lot, which means I have excellent experience in truffle-based recipes. But I'm not here to talk about the recipes. I'm here to give you the truffle hunting analogy. So, the people who gather the truffles in the Pacific Northwest always use dogs to actually go hunting for truffles. Dogs are not unreasonable animals to do this with, because you find truffles through the smell. They're buried deep in the ground, but they always emit a slight smell that an animal with a good sense of smell can find, and dogs have a good sense of smell. So there's a massive industry in the Pacific Northwest roaming through the woods with dogs that are trained to hunt truffles, digging up truffles and selling them at farmers market. But in Europe or in France, this is not what happens. Europeans always hunt truffles with pigs. And there are many arguments between American truffle hunters and European truffle hunters about what is the best animal. The pigs hunt truffles really well because they have a selfish interest in the truffle. A pig loves truffles. The reason a pig hunts truffles is because the pig wants the truffles. The reason a dog hunts truffles is because the dog loves you, and you've told it you like the truffles, so the dog will get the truffles for you. But it doesn't have the selfish motivation to get the truffle. It has an altruistic motivation. It's only grabbing around in the dirt for the truffles because you told it to. As soon as you tell it something else, it'll forget about the truffles and do whatever else you do. Pigs usually, if they found a good truffle patch, have to be dragged away kicking and screaming. They do not want to give up the truffles. It is their selfish motivation to get the truffles. And the upshot of this is that, at least according to Europeans, because obviously I'm speaking from the American side of the continent, pigs do find more truffles because of the selfish motivation. The downside, corollary, is that dogs actually do less damage. If the pig slipped its leash or got its muzzle off, it would actually grub up the truffle orchard. It would damage all the trees. It would create a massive scar in the forest. So using pigs to truffle hunt is dangerous because you have to control them. Whereas dogs, as soon as you whistle and call them off, they'll be gone. They're not interested in the truffles at all. But the key point here is that by harnessing the selfish motivation of pigs, Europeans can actually find masses and masses of truffles in the woods around here. So what does this have to do with open source, which is basically the meat of the talk I'm going to give you? You've all heard of the selfish motivation in open source because it's a very famous phrase. people who work in open source, it's all about scratching your own itch. Scratching your own itch is satisfying your own selfish motivation to get whatever is itching you done. Right? And this is a key point about almost all open source. It's actually made up usually of communities of volunteers who have a selfish interest. And the selfish interest is they want to see something change, something happen, something get done. Harnessing the selfish motivation is actually what can make communities move together. And open source wins in this regard, often because contributors self-select for being interested in the community. So this is a big difference from the way engineering and companies works is you hire a load of engineers, you don't really ask them what they're interested in, you put them on a task and you tell them to do it. In open source, you sort of flag, you might be interested in doing this project, and you sort of announce it on some broad mailing list, and chances are that the only people who turn up and are interested in it, come to you, are people who are already interested in this project. So open source already has the first advantage in that it is self-selected for people who are actually interested in the problem you're trying to solve, whatever it is you're trying to do. So this is strike one to open source. An interesting question in that regard, if everybody's just going to join and, you know, self-interest is enough, is actually, do we even need a cat herder? Do we need somebody to lead the project? It's an interesting theoretical question, and the answer in some communities is no, but in most communities is yes. And what I'm going to do to illustrate this is give you lessons from Linux. So you probably can't read this, but this is the email Linus Torvalds originally sent out announcing that he was actually going to start working on Linux 25th of August 1991. The first line is good because it sounds nicely ironic now. I'm doing a free and open source operating system. It's just a hobby and it won't be big and professional like GNU. And obviously we know Linux nowadays is definitely not big and professional. However, in this email, there are no mention of open source. There's no mention of any request for contributions. It's, I'm starting this project, that's it. What he says at the bottom is, any suggestions are welcome, but I won't promise I will implement them. What this means is, Linus actually thinks he's going to write all the code for Linux. So this was his idea when Linux first started. I'm writing all the code, you're going to tell me what you want, and I'll do it. That's going to scale really well, as we all found out. He's asking for suggestions. All he's doing is asking for suggestions and users, nothing else. You know, I produce the project, you consume it. And obviously, all these contributions in the shape of patches came flooding in. It was only sort of 10 patches in by the time Linus realized that he wasn't going to be the only contributor to this project. There were going to be loads. Linus, bless his heart, he liked things like memory management. He does not care about things like networking, things like storage, things that are really essential for a modern computer actually to run. So he realized very early on that a lot of these patches were in areas he didn't care about, but they were done by people who knew what they were doing, and they would really help his project get along. And indeed they did, because within a year of that